Welcome to Nerds at Church, a podcast about nerdery and the Bible. I'm Pastor Kay, and I use pronouns like she and her.
And I'm Pastor Emily, and my pronouns are they, them, theirs. In this episode, we'll discuss Pentecost, aka the birthday of the church, which this year falls on June 5th. One content notification for this episode, we do talk about adoption when discussing the Romans reading.
Check out the episode description for links to the Bible passages and other references we make in this episode.
For our deep dive for today, we are diving into Middle East geography, which is mostly because if you haven't seen the Acts reading, well, you'll know when you get there.
Yes. And personally speaking, I certainly can't speak for every church, but I know that this was not something that was covered in any real depth at my church growing up. There was definitely a stage in high school where I was better acquainted with the geography of, say, Middle Earth or the Star Trek universe than I was with biblical geography. And it turns out that not thinking of all these places as, like, imaginary, but instead as places that still do exist and you can travel to sometimes, helps you understand that you're talking about the real world. This isn't a fantasy land or even that far away.
Yes.
However, when it comes to talking about geography, we do have one major failing, which is that we are a podcast, and therefore we don't really have a lot of visual references that we can share with you or resources to share with you. I'm going to try to describe most of the geography that we find in the Bible by using the mental aid of a 12-hour analog clock. If you take the mental picture of a clock face and you drop that into the eastern half of the Mediterranean Sea, nowadays, you'll have the city of Cairo, Egypt, and the Nile River Delta at the south at about 6 o'clock on the clock face. And you'll find the western seaboard of Asia Minor, which these days is the country of Turkey, will be a bit west of true north at about, say, 11 o'clock or so, to give you an up and down orientation. So you've got Cairo at the bottom in Egypt, and the coast of Turkey up at about 11 o'clock. And that's a starting place for you. And then when you look for modern Israel, that will be on the coast to the southeast at about 4 o'clock on the clock face. And Lebanon and Syria will be to the north of there. And Jordan and modern Iraq will be straight east, just further out from the clock, basically, inland from there. And Greece, which we don't really get to in the Bible much until we get to the New Testament, is a bit further away from the clock face, but it's about at 10 o'clock, a little further west to the northwest. So if you just want to go around the clock face clockwise, you'll start with Greece, which I'm guessing a lot of us know better than some of these other parts of the geography that we're talking about. And so if you want to start with Greece at 10 o'clock, then you move a little bit further around the clock to the west coast of Asia Minor, which is now Turkey, closer to true north. And then Syria and Lebanon these days are about at 3 o'clock on the clock face, with Israel just south of them at 4 o'clock. And then go around to 6 o'clock to find Egypt and the Nile River Delta.
For those of you, like me, who are not auditory processors, it's really hard to explain world geography on a podcast. So we will try to do Google Maps of the area. You'll just have to match up the contemporary names with biblical names, which we'll get into shortly, to be able to compare them. But also, Kay has a wonderful resource on her website that we will link to that has a list of all of the names and stuff. And the names that she's saying are the modern countries. Most of those names are actually like pretty similar or the same now as they were in biblical times, at least insofar as they are translated into English.
We are not claiming that English makes any sense on this podcast. We would never say anything that silly.
Oh, no.
We only talk about Muppets.
And there are two big exceptions for countries and the ways that their naming has changed, and that's Turkey and Iraq. Turkey, on most Bible maps, is often called Asia Minor, which should sound familiar to you. That's just a regional name for the area before it became Turkey. So Turkey has a long history of occupation by different empires, including like the Ottoman Empire and all of that stuff. And so over the course, it was a region of Asia Minor, and then eventually has become what we know of as Turkey. And what is now Iraq to the east of Israel is often labeled Mesopotamia on biblical maps. And what is now Syria is generally called Assyria. So you can see like the similarities there.
Sure.
And that makes it a bit of an easier remembrance. But Iraq and Mesopotamia, Turkey and Asia Minor. The exact borders for all of these countries will obviously vary between biblical times and now. So that's just something like when we're saying this is in this area and this area and this area, it's general. We are not talking about the specific borders that humans have constructed and fought wars over. We're just talking about general areas.
That deep dive would take about 12 full episodes for this podcast, yeah. I think, especially in the Middle East. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's actually like a beautiful story people, I don't know if I can find it on geography, that's like the mountains and the rivers know the real truth that there are no borders between us. Like,
yes, absolutely. I mean, goodness knows, since moving to my adopted state of Minnesota, I've heard more stories about the general weirdness of the changing of the border between Minnesota and Canada than I ever really wanted to learn in the first place. And it's all mostly about, like, the river moved, and so we moved the border with it. Or the river moved, but we didn't want to move the border, so we decided to base it on something else instead, and then that tree fell down. And
yep.
Yeah, there's no good way to legislate any of this, yeah. Which basically we keep discovering. So.
And that's the case for a variety of borders, particularly in the United States. The southern border originally followed the Rio Grande, and the rivers move, and so that changes. Mm-hmm. But most states, especially in the Midwest and West, most states that don't have like straight line borders, the border like Iowa, the border was following a river. And so then there becomes this like, okay, is the border just the river no matter how the river moves? Or
do we try to stop the river from moving? Because let me tell you, that is a bad decision and leads to terrible things.
Correct. Also, I have yet to see anywhere, including the southern border of the United States, where there is a big black line that clearly delineates. This is the exact border between these places.
I did make it to the Four Corners once. There are four states that meet in a corner, and they Colorado do have a little like plaque in the ground with the little lines outlined and the names of the states and the four corners and all that. And you can dance and like put your feet in two of the states and your hands in the other two, and it's fun.
Yeah.
But that's not a very large scale thing. And also, usually there are enough people there that you are shoved off and it is someone else's turn after a couple minutes. So,
yeah. PSA, if you're doing it with kids, don't say, hey kid, I'm going to leave you in Colorado while I go to Utah. It will terrify your child. They have no concept of that.
Yikes.
Do not do it. Speaking from experience. I haven't been as an adult, but as a kid, we went to the Four Corners.
Yeah. My parents just like explained how I could be in multiple states at the same time. And I think by that point, they should have known that I was perfectly capable of being in multiple states at the same time because I was an emotionally complicated kid. But it was fun anyway.
Yeah, that's a much better approach to it than we're going to leave you in that state.
Yeah. So when we are reading the Jewish scriptures, we spend a lot of time talking about Egypt and Israel, or Canaan, as it was called before it became Israel by conquest. And you might remember reading about the Babylonian Empire and their war with Israel in biblical times, and the exile that many of the Jewish educated population went on in Babylon. Babylon was a city in an area which is now right in the middle of Iraq, almost straight east of Israel, and the city of Baghdad, which is sort of in the middle of Iraq, is about 50 miles north of where Babylon was back then.
Good to know. Also, later on in Jewish scriptures, Assyria would conquer first northern Israel and then southern Judea, which led to Israel being a province of various empires for a long time, including eventually the Roman Empire during Jesus' day and after in the New Testament. And there's a great theological book that is really accessible that talks from a Palestinian perspective about this concept of being under different empires. It's called Faith in the Face of Empire by Mitri Rahab, who is a pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Lands, which is Palestine.
And actually, he is now the Reverend Dr. Mitri Rahab, because he just accepted an honorary doctorate from my alma mater, Wartburg Theological Seminary.
Aha. Yes. So we'll link to Faith in the Face of Empire.
He's also a fantastic preacher. I got to hear him at a couple of different events.
Yeah, he is wonderful, and he came to LSTC while I was there, while I was in seminary.
Cool. And then also Paul, who we talk about a lot on the show. I suppose only some of the time we're complaining about him. Sometimes we're just talking about him. He does show up a lot in the Bible.
Well, and we did like a whole deep dive on him.
Yes, on him, personally.
For Easter 3, so.
And so the reason why I went into so much depth about where the western coast of Asia Minor was is because Paul spent a lot of time bopping around in Asia Minor, on that coastline mostly, and then also he went up over to Greece and also spent a little time in Macedonia, which is just slightly northeast of Greece, sort of, not exactly, but sort of between Greece and Turkey, but not exactly. Because geography is a little more complicated than that. But Macedonia is where he met Lydia, the seller of purple cloth.
Yes. And then Patmos. Patmos is where John the Revelator lived. So John the Revelator is who we're talking about when we talk about the book of Revelation. So that we did a deep dive into Revelation for our Easter 2 episode, because we've been covering Revelation and talking about it quite a bit this past Easter season. So Patmos is a small island that is a part of Greece, but is actually closer to the southern part of the western coast of Asia Minor, aka Turkey. So it's closer to Turkey, but is part of Greece. There's also a fair amount of discrepancy that happens even nowadays about, like, this island is part of this country. No, it's part of this country. It's not just Russia trying to take over Ukraine, but there are other kind of...
And everywhere else.
Well, and everywhere else. But there are other kind of skirmishes and those sorts of things that also exist. So just to be aware of that.
So I hope that this general overview of Middle East and biblical geography was helpful. And it can give you a general idea of where people are going or where people are from.
Yes. If you are interested in trying your hand at geography, not just in the Middle East, but throughout the globe, freerice.com is a fun game to play that also provides food for folks. You can also do the Wordle offshoot that is Worldle, which is ridiculously difficult for me to say. We will link to both of those games in the episode notes, but Worldle is they put a country shape on there, and then you guess, and then they tell you, like, no, you're off by this many miles or kilometers or whatever, and they point in a direction. So I don't remember if they point, like, you need to go this way or it's from this way, but yeah. So those are things that you can definitely easily check out.
Our first reading for this episode is from Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9. The people of the earth, all speaking the same language, gather in one place and plan to build a city with a tall tower, so that they will be famous and not be scattered. God sees there will be no limit on what they can do if they can do this, and so gives them different languages and scatters them across the earth.
So one of the themes in this passage is the idea of myths and legends. And this story in particular reads very classically as a story of how humans came to have many languages, right? There are a variety of different, like, myths and legends that different cultures have about, like, how things came to be. This is a very, very classic one of, like, this is clearly someone was like, why do we all speak different languages and live in different places?
Sure.
This is the answer that is given. And also, fun fact, Babel with two B's, well, technically three B's, B-A-B-E-L, is a way to learn a language. So many people are into Duolingo these days, but Babel is more biblically connected. I am not endorsing either one necessarily, having not actually engaged with either one, but I do think it's cool when there are, like, Babel as
yes.
Babel.
No, it's a great name choice. Absolutely. I have not tried Babbel myself. I did use Duolingo for a while. Mm-hmm. And the other language-using app I've tried is called Memrise. M-E-M-R-I-S-E. And that was also super useful, but everything on it is user-created. So it's all a little unofficial and a little random.
And we will link to all of those.
And it's free.
In our episode descriptions. I think all of those are free, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, well, you can pay Duolingo extra money if you want to, like, do stuff faster. And I think Babbel does the same thing, but Memrise is just 100% free. Or at least it used to be.
Yeah, I am a fan of people learning lots of new languages because I know languages. There's also the Oklahoma School for the Deaf had a class that they gave for free for learning ASL. And it was not just, oh, cool. Like... here's how to spell. That was part of it, but like that was part of the first day of it. But yeah,
sure.
I signed up for that and I'm still working my way through and I have access to it for like 7 or 8 months, which is cool.
And as we dive into the verses, in verse 1, we read, "Now the whole earth had one language and the same words." Now, it's actually that second part that amazes me. One language is one thing, but the same words is a whole separate concept. Yeah, because I swear, like, no I speak dialogue. The same language. Yeah, I speak the same language as the people around me on a regular basis, but we mean wildly different things with exactly the same words. Now, sometimes that is dialect, absolutely. I have been to the southern part of the U.S., and I understand the difference between y'all and all y'all, depending on where you are, changes dramatically. And there are other similar things. And goodness knows, I have had to explain to more than one newcomer to the Midwest that what people say and how they say it may not always match up with what they mean. And that is an extraordinary thing to try to get through with a language barrier, but I've tried. But mm-hmm. even when you're talking to someone who has a very similar language background to you, even when you're talking with someone who you know quite well, I've been married for 10 years, and my husband and I still do this. earlier this week, we had a complete misunderstanding about who was going to be eating what of the food that we had gotten for lunch and dinner, despite the fact that we both came out of the initial conversation about it agreeing with each other. And I still don't know why. Like, none of that makes sense to me at all. Or have you ever had to have a conversation with someone about exactly what the word biweekly is supposed to mean?
Right?
Because technically, it means both.
Yeah.
Technically, it means twice a week and also every other week. And that is not a meaning that makes any sense. Like, if you look it up. Yeah, if you look it up in a dictionary, it will tell you that it can mean either way. And no one has ever bothered nailing that down.
I was just thinking of, like, things like, bless your heart, and how that means.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
A million different things. But yeah.
Sometimes it's kind and sometimes it's not.
Yep. And then in verse 4, we read, "Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves. Otherwise we shall be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth." So make a name for ourselves is a particular, like, reputation and famous and all of those things, which is, you know, covered in the irony of the description that Kay gave for the passage. But I do love the space of Pose, the show, as making a name. Like, Pose is very much about making a name, but it's not make a name for us individually or, like, that sort of thing. It's about making a name for the house, for the whole community and family, which is more community-focused and is, like, not make a name for us in, like, opposition to God.
Right.
Which is where it gets, like, a distinction from the people of Babbel, of what will be known as Babbel.
Don't treat people as gods, don't try to become God, don't try to turn other people into God. All of those stories lead to very bad places.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, essentially warning literature about all of those stories for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about the Bible, I'm also talking about fiction. We keep imagining how those stories would go because we want to warn each other not to do them.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And then in verse 6 we read, "Look, they are one people, and they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them." So on the one hand, it's lovely to hear that God believes in you this much. Like, I just want to throw that out there. It's been a heck of a few weeks. And like, it's nice to know that God believes that we can do anything. On the other hand, the more that we do things, the more I realize that anything really does mean a whole lot of different things. And anything is not always good.
Truth.
This also reminds me of part of how we introduced ourselves to one of our seminary professors. She asked us what languages did we speak, and not just the English and Spanish types of languages, but also things like hobbies or regions or genres or pastimes or various other things. And so I wound up explaining that I speak classic Star Trek, City and Rural Midwest, fanfic, and church camp, for example. And it was a really helpful exercise, and I would suggest that to anyone who's trying to get to know new people. What languages or dialects do you speak, not only in terms of actual language and dialects, but also in terms of stuff like that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I would say I do not speak rural Midwest at all, but I do speak church camp and church broadly, and YAGM, Young Adults and Global Mission. And I still speak dystopian
young adult literature.
Yep, I speak that. I speak Harry Potter still fluently.
Oh, sure.
Doctor Who pretty fluently. Working on improving my Doctor Who soon. And I speak art pretty fluently.
And math. And space.
Math and space. I love math and space. Those are some of my favorite languages. Sadly, my Slovak has decreased significantly, and my Romani was never super great, but even
less. I can imagine that in the US it would be hard to find people to practice with.
It's true. It's true. Spanish and English, still going great. Hebrew and Greek, I can do it with a dictionary.
Also, happily, we have computer software for that now.
It's true. That is a fun exercise. I like that. Mm-hmm. Then in verse 7, God says, "Come, let us go down and confuse their language there, so that they will not understand one another's speech." And this raises the question of, is this a blessing or a curse? My first year of seminary, we had the first of what has become many snowpocalypses. And it was my first snow day ever. In my life.
I always forget that while Colorado does get snow, it's not usually a lot because you're so high up.
No, we do get a lot of snow. We just know how to take care of it.
Well, that too. Yes, that helps.
Also, Vail in particular, like, our entire economy is dependent on both getting lots of snow and making sure people have access to the mountain. Yep. So we have, like, about as... The joke is the difference between how Denver does snow and how Vail does snow is that Vail has about 50 plows for all the roads, and Denver has about 50 plows for all the roads.
Yeah, that'll probably do it.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was my first snow day, and we got a ton of snow, and so we went into the courtyard, and we started to try to build a Tower of Babel in the snow.
That is the most seminary thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, then we were, like, going to sacrifice one of the first years off the top of it, at the top of it.
Of course. That's what first years are for.
Yeah, and while we had, like, giant tubs of snow, we did not quite make it to the 20 feet that was needed to sacrifice first year, which is, I was in my first year at the time.
Hmm.
And so we were not blessed with more languages.
Aww.
But, so, that's my own little, like, hashtag polyglot, hashtag linguophile kind of experience. But also, if you want to know more about language and translation, you should definitely check out last year's Pentecost episode with Jake Rapp, who is a language professor, because we dove really deep into all of that, and it was awesome. And so we'll link to that in our episode description.
Yeah.
Also, we had a giant storm yesterday, and so our power and internet is all complicated. So I'm out of friends and drinking out of an Ursula coffee mug, so I would be remiss if I didn't say that also it's probably a good thing that none of the people of Babel talked to Ursula about their plans or anything, because that would have been another way to take care of it, is to take away their voice, and then they would have developed ASL and whatever languages they were speaking.
Yes. But Ursula particularly wanted Ariel's voice because she had a nice one. We don't know if the people of Babel spoke, you know, prettily or not. They might not have been able to carry a tune in a bucket.
Good point, good point. So, we forgot to say at the beginning, but if you are in worship this week, you will probably hear either Genesis or Romans, but you will most certainly, you should hear Acts, because it is the actual story of Pentecost. So our Acts reading this week is Acts chapter 2, verses 1 through 21. the story of the first Christian Pentecost. The Holy Spirit descends on the apostles and gives them the gift of speaking many languages so they can share the story of Jesus with people from around the world. So the general theme for me in this one is basically that the Holy Spirit would definitely fall in the D&D alignment chart into the category of chaotic good.
I can definitely see that. Yes.
Right. Decidedly good, but also decidedly chaotic, right? A rush of violent wind, flames on top of heads, all these different languages. Chaotic good.
Also, the fire safety part of my personality wants to point out that mixing a violent wind and flames is not usually a good combination. You want to be really careful with that.
Yes. The pyro in me recognizes the pyro in you.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious, though, how you would find, like, Jesus alignment. What would Jesus alignment be? I feel like he's not as chaotic. Like, he's more neutral. Not lawful, but kind of lawful.
So the thing about the lawful characteristic is that it's not that you're necessarily talking about society's laws. Like, yeah. the concept is that you have a set of laws and you run by that. Whereas neutral people are very fuzzy about laws, and chaotic people don't care about law, like having a personal code or anything at all.
I always thought of neutral people as fuzzy about laws, but also they could be very lawful in some respects and very chaotic in other respects.
Right. So, like, I'm currently running a person who follows Kellum Vor, the Lord of the Dead in D&D, and on the one hand, she's very into Kellum Vor because he's very sort of neutral about death. Death isn't meant to be a punishment, it's just a part of the life cycle, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, she's deeply irritated at this whole concept of if you have enough money, you can pay to get reincarnated or resurrected or whatever. And that makes death, like, unfair by definition. And so on the one hand, she is super, and Kellum Vor himself is lawful neutral, because death is not necessarily good or bad in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have a set of laws to it, particularly in the D&D world, when the laws are, like, mathematically calculated. and so my character, she would call herself lawful good, but she's got a slightly different set of laws than Kellum Vor does.
Mm.
Even though she does follow him.
Yeah, so maybe Jesus is lawful good, because there is a, like, very clear adherence to, it's the, like, psychological development where you get to the point where, like, it's not, you avoid, you do good
God's
things
concept
because you
of
avoid
the law
bad
is
things.
Different than ours.
Yeah, that it's, like, above, and so there's a higher, quote-unquote, law that Jesus follows. So lawful good.
But, I mean, Jesus definitely has some chaos to him. You can have some chaos to your personality while still being lawful.
Yeah. That's why I was wondering about neutral, because not in the fuzzy about laws sense, but in the has lawful and has chaotic together.
Yeah. Like, I think that malicious compliance is both a lawful and a chaotic action, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that's part of what Jesus does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh, fascinating. And then in verse 4, as we dive into the readings, we read, all of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages as the Spirit gave them ability. And I just finished reading Color Me In, which is a great young adult novel about a girl named Nevea. And her dad is a white Jew and her mom is a Black Baptist. And her, her parents are in the middle of a divorce, and there's a, like, now she has to, like, there's a push from her dad / her dad's side for her to actually be a bat mitzvah.
Sure.
Though she's, like, 16. So past the usual time, because he wasn't engaged with his Judaism religiously, culturally. And so I was thinking about that in the ways, and, like, the ways that the story culminates are really beautiful, and I highly recommend this book. But the navigation that she has to do with, as someone who is white and Black, who is mixed race, who is light-skinned, who has Jewish and Christian roots and realities, goes to a private school, lives with her family who goes to a public school during the divorce, like, all of these different languages that she navigates in, like, really beautiful ways. And then in verse 6, we read, and at this sound, the crowd gathered and was bewildered, because each one heard them speaking in the native language of each. I was wondering if, like, the sound of the great violent wind was actually the sound of a TARDIS landing. which would make everything make more sense, right? Because you hear the whoosh, 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 which sounds kind of windy.
Yeah.
And then the TARDIS lands, and then the TARDIS makes it so that everybody can understand in their own language.
That is a wonderful theory. My only problem with it is that while this is a chaotic moment, there's no, like, continuing chaos that continues to happen. And that always happens when the Doctor shows up. So, like, possibly the Doctor just showed up to, like, refill on coffee or something. But
there's no ongoing chaos that we know of.
Yes, it might have just not made the Bible, which, to be fair, I'm sure there's lots of chaos that didn't make the Bible.
Exactly. So, yeah.
And then in verses 9 through 11, we get this giant list of countries and regions. And this is, of course, why we did a deep dive into the geography of the Middle East today.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need a list of those places that has been updated to modern geography, or if you would like a pronunciation guide for the places as they are listed in the Bible, I put together a guide for both a few years ago, and those are available on a mostly now unused blog. But I'll just leave that up forever, probably. And I hope those can be useful to you. But discovering that the places that are named are now places that we know as Afghanistan and Turkmenistan and so on was super helpful for me for realizing where all these people were from and understanding that this was a thing that happened in our world that we still live in.
Yes.
And it made me feel more connected to the story.
Yep. And we will link to that. I mentioned that list during our deep dive, so we'll have a link to that in the episode description.
And then in verse 15, we read, "Indeed, these are not drunk, as you suppose, for it is only 9 o'clock in the morning." So in a recent episode, I think I mentioned that I'm re-listening to the Not Another D&D podcast campaigns. They're now on their third D&D campaign, and this is a podcast that is for grown-ups. And I'm very much enjoying it. And generally, D&D is a polytheistic universe with a bunch of different gods being worshipped and having different things that they're in charge of and having different amounts of presence and effectiveness in the various planes of existence and so on. Mm-hmm. But this podcast made up their own unique world and pantheon while still using the D&D rules because they didn't want to, you know, have to mess around with copyright, which would be a mess. And so one of the gods that they invented, Pelor, is generally a sort of life and nature-centered god. And he is described as a very athletic and tanned Santa Claus, but wearing board shorts with a beach ball in one hand and a beer in the other and winking at you through his sunglasses. And every time this comes up, it just makes me smile because that is not a type of god that I have run into in any of these various pantheons. And he's just generally very fun and has a good sense of humor. And those who serve Pelor often use the catchphrase of, "It's always 5 o'clock somewhere." And wow, these stories would go so differently in this world. Like, I cannot even imagine how different, you know, Peter and Paul would have been personality-wise if they were working for Pelor instead of the biblical god. And they definitely could have used a little more time on the beach and relaxing with a giant friendly Santa Claus. But
that is fascinating. Also, 9 a.m. in Palestine is 2 a.m. in the Eastern time zone, so that's definitely drinking time.
Sure.
Speaking of 5 o'clock somewhere.
For those who manage to still stay up that late. I don't think I have for...
Well, I was like, 2 o'clock. Central time is 1 o'clock. Mountain time is midnight. Pacific time, it's only 11 p.m.
We're fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have options. Our third reading for today is from Romans chapter 8, verses 14 through 17. Paul tells the church in Rome that we need not fear because we have been adopted by God as children and heirs.
So one of the themes in this passage is the idea of family, but like the queer version. So this is not biological family, and there's very little actual biblical like precedence for biological family being the be-all end all of things.
Just ask Joseph.
Yeah. Both Josephs, actually.
Yeah.
It took me a second, and then I was like, well, I mean, Joseph of the beautiful, beautiful princess dress probably was not thrilled with his bio-fam.
Yeah.
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 But I'm thinking more of, like, the queer family, the chosen family. So thinking about, like, I just finished the latest Queer Eye season. And so the ways that the Queer Eye, the Fab Five, form their own chosen family, but also, like, so many of the different people that they go to have this, like, real clear, perfectly queer, chosen family that is their family. Or, like, vampires. We just finished, last week, we just finished the final Horror Nerds at Church episode for Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. And so we are done with the Twilight episodes, but we have vampire retrospectives coming up. But, like, that idea of chosen family, that they are all adopted and chosen and made into their family, which is really beautiful.
Yes. Yes, that is wonderful.
Then as we dive into the verses, in verse 14, we read, "For all who are led by the Spirit of God are children of God," as opposed to children of the corn, which I have not seen that particular horror film, but when I did study abroad for a January term in Ecuador, our group was with a couple different groups, and our professor was with us just for the beginning and then left. And we were the best behaved, and so we were called they called us the children of the corn, because something was going on, because there were no adults and we looked perfectly well behaved.
Nice. I also read verse 14, and when I read it, I was thinking about what this means, of course. If we are all the children of God, that means that for better or worse, we are all also siblings. Now, whether this leads to a Gilmore Girls-style dance to We Are Family by Sister Sledge, or as Tolstoy put it, his famous quote of, "Happy families are all alike, but unhappy families are all unhappy in their own way," well, that's kind of up to us, isn't it? Sometimes siblings can be wonderful, so I hear. I don't personally have any, but it can make life more interesting, to use a very dangerous word.
It is definitely more interesting and adventuresome to have siblings. Can confirm. Speaking for me and my one sibling. Mm-hmm. And then we read in verse 15, "For you did not receive a spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received a spirit of adoption when we cry, Abba, Father." PSA, public service announcement for you all. Please do not glorify adoption. This sense of adoption that we're talking about with God is not at all the same as adoptions that take place legally and otherwise in this world. You can check out our human trafficking deep dive for some insights into why adoption is more complicated. But here, there is agency in this, right? Like, we receive a spirit of adoption from God, but there is agency in whether or not we want to participate in that adoption, whether or not we want God to adopt us. So that's different. Also, a reminder that the phrase and concept "domestic supply of infants" is evil, and it is super harmful.
Yes.
And the overwhelming feedback that we have received from people, from adult adoptees, is that domestic supply of infants is, like, that whole concept is bad.
Yeah, I don't know that I know anyone who read that phrase and did not immediately, like, physically lurch back from wherever they were reading it, like the screen or the page that they were reading it on. That's horrifying. And then in verse 17 we read, "And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if in fact we suffer with him so that we may also be glorified with him." And, you know, this verse with that whole suffering and therefore glorifying thing, it kind of reminds me that being an heir isn't always a good thing. Like, I love my mom, but I also could have done without inheriting her knees. That was not necessary. I would have been totally good with a set of functional knees, but no, instead I got to inherit my mom's. Ron Weasley would have been a very different character, a very different person, if he had not inherited his mom's temper. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that whole being an heir thing, it gets complicated.
It's true. I am a fan of having inherited my dad's hair.
Okay, cool. Sure. There are things that I've inherited from my family that I appreciate, but my mom's knees are not one of them.
Understand. And then our gospel reading for this episode is John chapter 14, verses 8 through 17, and optionally also verses 25 through 27. Jesus tells Philip and the disciples that God is in Jesus and Jesus' works, and that those who believe this will do even greater works in Jesus' name, keeping his commandments, with the help of the advocate whom God will send to them. So one of the themes that comes up in this passage is the idea of mystery, right? The unknown mystery that is to come. And I was thinking about it, and so much there's supposed to be like mystery in fiction that like then gets revealed and stuff. But I love the idea of mystery in terms of Encanto, because we have different ways of experiencing mystery in our lives. And so this idea that like so many of the family members in Encanto experience fear associated with mystery. And Barbara Brown Taylor talks about this in Learning to Walk in the Dark, but like the unknown, we can approach it with fear, but we can also approach it with curiosity or anticipation. And the reality for Encanto is that like the thing that is coming, yeah, is hard and involves like the destruction of the entire house. But ultimately, what is coming is not bad. It is this beautiful, richer, fuller thing, which is really cool.
Yeah. And jumping into the verses, in verse 8 we read, Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, and we will be satisfied. I'm not entirely sure if I've mentioned this before on this podcast. I may have mentioned it on the previous incarnation of this podcast. But I spent a decent chunk of my years in high school as a moderator on a online atheist versus theist debate message board. Which is one of those things that people who know me look at me and say, yes, that is a very you thing to have done. And what that meant, in part, is that I was thoroughly exhausted by and had turned inside out in about 14 different ways the whole can you prove there's a God argument by the time I graduated high school. And, you know, then I went to college and majored in religion, and then I went to seminary. And let me tell you, they all thought that they were going to break my brain with these concepts, and I was already done with them. So I am quite willing to admit that St. Thomas Aquinas was very lacking in that department, although his sense of organization about it was actually pretty helpful to me. His Summa Theologicae is extremely well organized, and the part of me that is descended from my engineer grandfather very much appreciates that. But his actual arguments for the existence of God, trying to prove that God exists, were not great on the whole. But if you want to contemplate the whole argument of can you prove that God exists, the one argument from classical times that I would point you to, and as far as I know, I wouldn't really point you toward any from modern times. People just keep like trying the new versions of the old stuff, and it doesn't really make any big difference, in my experience. But if you want to look into one of the classic arguments, try St. Anselm's ontological argument. Don't worry about spelling ontological, just Google St. Anselm and proving God exists or something like that, and you'll find it. And when you read a English translation of his actual original work, which I am also not even going to bother trying to pronounce, it starts with P-R-O and is quite a long name. You'll find that he has about three arguments in that work for his argument for God's existence, three separate ideas trying to prove that God exists in this back and forth dialogue that he has with another guy. And his first version of the argument has some flaws that are explored by this other guy's response, and then he responds with his second version of the argument, which is the best known, which goes, God is that than which nothing greater can be conceived. Basically, there must be a greatest being or a greatest thing of some type, and that would be what created the rest of everything, essentially. And there are some arguments that have been successfully made limiting that in various ways. But his third argument, that a being which exists is necessarily greater than one that does not actually exist, no one has really bothered with for nearly as much, and still basically stands. It is the one argument trying to prove that God must exist that no one has really been able to knock down yet, in part because a lot of people don't really read Anselm that closely to start with, which is probably not fair. But it's an interesting take that's a little bit more nuanced and in-depth than a lot of the traditional arguments for trying to prove that God exists. And, you know, can God microwave a burrito so hot that God, oh, God can't eat it, kind of thing. Yeah, it's a little bit more interesting. So.
Gotcha. Fascinating. And then in verse 11, we read Jesus saying, believe me that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. If you do not, then believe me because of the works themselves. And this whole passage, but especially like this particular verse, just reminds me of Russian nesting dolls. I am in the Father and the Father, right? So you have like the Father and then Jesus and then the Father and the Spirit's in there somewhere, and they just like keep trading who's on the outside.
Nice. So not just Russian nesting dolls, but they're also all constantly changing size and, like, hopping in and out of each other.
Yeah. Or not even changing sides. There's just, like, multiple different sizes of them.
Yes.
It's like an infinity of, I am in this one, and then smaller, this one.
Because God is capable of being both enormous and very tiny all at the same time.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that image. And then in verse 12, we read, "Very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these, because I am going to the Father." So what on earth does it mean to do greater works than Jesus? Like, that sounds like a heck of a promise, and also kind of like a homework assignment, and it makes me a little uncomfortable. But when I think about it in a little bit more depth, Jesus' time on earth was pretty limited. Like, I have already lived on this earth longer than Jesus did, and I am old, but I'm not that old. And so saving more actual, like, individual lives than Jesus did personally while on earth wouldn't be a completely impossible concept. Like, he definitely saved a bunch of people and also healed a bunch of people, but I think most medical professionals during the course of a full life's career probably save more lives mm-hmm. than Jesus did.
Yeah.
Or certainly heal more people than Jesus did. Or, you know, heaven, certainly if you, like, invent a virus vaccine, ooh, or if you enact gun control or any number of other things, mm-hmm. you can also save more people than Jesus did. So, like, it does take some effort. You have to put in some work, generally speaking. But ultimately, I suppose it's doable, depending on what kind of job you want to go into and or what hobbies you have. So it's not completely impossible.
Yeah. I imagine operating a crisis line
would
also be...
Absolutely.
And then in verse 17 we read, "This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees her nor knows her. You know her, because she abides with you, and she will be in you." So, another Russian nesting doll. But I was thinking about this, and, like, the Spirit of truth, and the show Dear White People, which is about telling the truth. There's such clear, like, there are particular ways to tell the truth, and fiction and poetry are actually some of the best ways to tell the truth, honestly. But Dear White People is this, like, thing that plays with the truth, because there's, like, telling the truth, and there's pushing on things and withholding the truth, and, like, all for the, like, larger truth. And Kay, your and my denomination is really quite terrible at the Spirit of truth and acknowledging, particularly, yeah, abuses of power and,
I mean,
harm.
Granted, I can't offhand think of any denominations that are actively better at it, but...
Also fair.
Yeah, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And now it's time for our newest segment of our podcast, Let's Make a Muppets Musical, where we look at the readings that we've talked about today and talk about how would we cast them if we were going to turn them into a Muppets musical, either with Muppets or the occasional token human.
So I was thinking of the Tower of Babel, the Genesis reading, and the like, building the Tower of Babel actually feels like a Sesame Street episode, and you could...
Yes, it does. With blocks!
Yeah, and it could be sponsored by the letter B and the number 1.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's great. I think Elmo would also very much enjoy building the tower and then probably also knock it over accidentally several times. I, on the other hand, was thinking about the Axe reading, and I am torn because I have two possible mental images for this, and I really like both of them. One of them is that I would really love the story of Pentecost as told by the Muppets with Gonzo and Rizzo. And so, like, they could host and probably also be wearing costumes that are correct for biblical times, just like they wore Dickensian costumes for the Christmas Carol. And I think that would be wonderful. And really only Gonzo could match the chaotic good energy of the Holy Spirit anyway. But my other mental image is, I was thinking about the whole geography thing we did, and when it comes to that whole listing of countries in the Pentecost reading, and I suddenly had the mental image of Miss Piggy in Carmen Sandiego's outfit with the hat and the trench coat and the bright red. Mm-hmm. And I think she would love traveling around to different countries and having people trying to find her and possibly, like, teaching kids about geography. I think she would have great fun with that. So I'm kind of torn between both, either.
Yeah.
I think both could work. So, yeah.
That would be really fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Catch us next time when we'll discuss nerdery connections to the scripture readings for Holy Trinity Sunday. This podcast has been produced by us, Emily Ewing and Kay Rolla. For more fun, check us out on Twitter and Facebook at Nerds at Church, or contact us at nerdsatchurch@gmail.com.
Also, if you like what you've heard, rate us or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you want access to our uncut guest episodes and interviews, live Q&As, and more, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdsatchurch. It's cheaper than a ticket at your local bus station.
It's true. Also, let us know on Facebook or Twitter who you would cast for Let's Make a Muppets Musical for this episode.
As the ancient Christians said, Pax Vobiscum.